Welcome to a Bowden Education podcast. In this podcast, we will be discussing the idea and importance of resilience with David Gumbrell. David is a former head teacher who is passionate about keeping the best early career teachers in the profession. On the back of this, he established the Resilience Project, offering materials and resources to encourage teachers to look after themselves. And he also published, most recently, the book Lift. So welcome, David.
Hi.
So let's kick off with, how did you come across the need, first of all, to talk about resilience in schools?
Well, the need came when I was the head teacher, and I used to find it incredibly difficult to recruit and find the new teachers that I needed to fill the positions that I had in my school. And rather than getting down about that, I decided that there needed to be something to be thought through and to come up with a solution, because basically I like to come up with solutions rather than problems. So I approached my local teacher training provider and asked them if they wanted to be part of a project that could look and find a solution. And to cut a long story short, we found what we thought was a solution, which was to write some materials to support those already in school and about to go into schools on their resilience, because we realised that resilience and recruitment were connected, and resilience, recruitment and retention were connected. So it became my new three R's, I think.
Okay. And when you say it was really hard to recruit, was it because you found people leaving the profession and being in a position of constantly having to recruit? And was that linked to the resilience notion of where you kind of started thinking about, we've got a resilience problem?
We had a normal flow of people coming through the school, as I think other people do. So it wasn't a constant challenge. It was more trying to find a solution to a wider issue that was building. And I think 2.5 years ago, the idea of resilience was newer than it is now, really. So we kind of caught it at the early stages and wanted to try and get onto that wave, onto that curve. But I think that many were going to promotions, because we did promote good teachers. And some were retiring, as teachers do, and so it wasn't for this particularly for my individual school. It was just talking at heads meetings and talking in with colleagues that recruitment was becoming a topic, a thing that people would want to ask opinions of colleagues about. And that was what was really stimulating it for me.
So what kind of statistics exist, David, around resilience rates in teaching? How can we, you know, what info is there for us to kind of think about to get an idea of the challenge that we're trying to solve, really?
Yeah, sure. I mean, anecdotally, it's, as I say, the words on the lips of head teachers at the forefront of education and in schools, and I think a lot of statistics are bandied around, and part of me does think that the government do have numbers but are trying to suppress those numbers. I think when you link it into the work of the Educational Support Partnership, then they're coming up with numbers that 6 in 10 might not get to fifth year of teaching. And they're kind of scary numbers, really. I don't know how what proportion of the teaching population they spoke to in regards to, but there's certainly a significant drop off in the early years of teaching. So teachers are dropping out after their NQT year, because that seems to be a bit of a milestone. And then there's significant data around this kind of year five. So they are starting to realise that the money isn't quite there in teaching. The career path isn't really there in teaching. and that it's starting to have an impact on their everyday life. And I think, unfortunately, that teaching has increasingly become a job that is encroaching on our work-life balance.
Yeah, and as you say, there are, well, you know, the Wellbeing Index data produced is showing that in bucket loads, actually, isn't it, around this blurring of the lines between workload and being able to conduct a well-balanced life. And perhaps going back to what you said about teachers leave after the NQT year, and maybe there's a rationale in that that's always going to happen. It's like with anything, if people start a degree course, you're always going to get a bigger fallout early on, you know, in that first year. How can you, what are your thoughts really about that sort of 5 year, because that's the bigger and worrying statistic, actually, moreover than the those leaving at the end of their NQT year.
Yeah,
what do you think's happening and going on around that kind of 5 year attrition?
Yeah, well, I completely agree with you in terms of the NQT, and I think that we need a healthy level of attrition in terms of, I believe passionately that we need to protect our profession, and those who are not wholeheartedly passionate about the profession, I think, do need to walk away. So I'm not scared of a certain amount of dropout rate, but there is a concern around the year five. And I think that what's happening is that they are the acceleration of into leadership is too quick and too fast, and it's not structured and it's not thought through. So at the end of year five, you would be looking to, in this day and age, arguably you could be middle leader, senior leader, you could be on a deputy head course. Because what's happening, I believe, is that the leaders are leaving as well, and everybody's moving up a rank. Recruitment is very difficult. People aren't generally moving schools or moving jobs, and therefore everyone just shuffles up one. But I think we're shuffling up one too quickly, too soon, and without the necessary training. So I welcome the kind of early career framework, and I welcome other support measures to put in place to kind of give these new recruits the chance to build up those strengths, those skills. But I think more needs to be done.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you about this rush to leadership. And I think people need to just stop, slow down and really develop their craft before taking on something that actually might seem appealing at the time. But to say they're not ready sounds not very supportive and not very encouraging, maybe. But actually taking a step into leadership is a huge burden if you don't actually haven't got the foundations in which to do it. So I completely agree.
Leadership is very different from class teaching. Leadership is not something you train for at initial teach training providers. You train to be a teacher. And if you're a good practitioner in the classroom, that doesn't make you a good leader. So I think there's more training that needs to be put in for young teachers to understand what leadership means and how that will change your relationships within school. Because again, I think that people come out of the classroom into leadership and don't realise that relationships with colleagues change as a result. And I think that sometimes is quite a shock to colleagues that happens. And I think that needs to be considered and thought through more than it actually is.
Yeah, and it can suddenly become quite lonely as well when you realise that your relationships and your support network isn't the same. So, yeah. David, moving on, before we go on to talk a little bit about why we need teachers to have more resilience, how would you define resilience?
Well, that's the ultimate question, I guess. I mean, people generally go for bounce back ability, don't they? But I'm not a great fan of that word, because I think that it's a reactive state. In terms of, you know, woe is me, I can't do anything about it. And for me, resilience is very much about proactively managing yourself so that you don't, if you do have to bounce back, you're not bouncing back from quite so far away. So for me, it's about being proactive about managing your mental health. So it's about doing the basics well and doing the basics before it goes bang. So it's around good quality sleep and protecting sleep and realizing that the restorative power of sleep. It's about eating properly and not passing on lunch, or not saying to yourself that you don't have time for lunch or you haven't got time to go to the staff room. It's about time for connecting with other people and sharing the woes and the burdens, but the joys of teaching. That's all part and parcel of what we need to do. But we're not doing that. We're not looking after ourselves. We are the most...
Go on, carry on.
We are the most compassionate profession there is to everybody other than ourselves. And what I, in my training and through the book, is very much around look after yourself in order to be the best teacher that you can be.
And it's really what you've just said, though. It's really the basics, isn't it? Kind of maybe when you're talking to staff or student teachers or early career teachers even, it's sort of teaching grandmother to suck eggs in a way, you know, go to bed, sleep well, eat well, exercise. It's all really basic things. Yet if you look, and maybe if we surveyed, and I don't know, maybe you have some intelligence on this, if we survey teachers, how many are actually just neglecting these basics?
I would say the vast majority. I think it's become the normal. It's become the sub-norm to allow work to come into the home environment. And as we become ever more connected social media wise, WhatsApp groups and connecting teachers together in their downtime, that we're not getting that downtime. We're not doing enough to protect that downtime. So we're not recharging our batteries. And then in order to recover in the kind of fast forward recovery, you know, we're binge watching Netflix till 2 o'clock in the morning, going to bed, not getting the restorative sleep that we need, and then press repeat. But that what that does is our productivity is diminishing, our mental health is diminishing, our resilience is diminishing, but partly through our own means, partly because we just don't protect the basics anymore.
Yeah, and I think there perhaps is too much of a notion of this strange competitiveness within a school environment of who arrives first, who leaves last. And that's not necessarily conducive, is it, to looking after people's health and their long-term resilience to stay in the profession?
Absolutely. I think there's a real misnomer about working hard all of the time. There's a lot of research that I'm looking into at the moment about productivity, and that we all have times when we are at our most productive, and in those times we need to be working, but we also need that, as I say, downtime. But we're trying to keep going, we're trying to beat the system, we're trying to beat nature, and we're failing miserably. And in the smorgasbord of connectivity, we feel we need to utilize it all of the time. So because we've got all you can eat data, we feel we need to use it. But actually, there's a lot to be said for switching off the email, switching off the mobile phone contact, and just stopping, pausing, getting off that hamster wheel, and enjoying other things. And if we could do just simple things outside of school, I believe we'd be better teachers, happier teachers, and be less robotic in the classroom.
And therefore, in the end, more productive.
Therefore, in the end, a better teacher. In the end, more creative. In the end, more engaging, because there's an interest level outside of school. And I actually think, you know, when we're talking about let's promote resilience in children, well, actually, I don't believe that some teachers are the best role models to be able to do that, because they don't look after themselves. Therefore, they're not in the best position to model that for young people, and that we need to manage ourselves in order to be able to teach it to others.
Yeah, and going back to you talked about this bounce back ability, and I completely agree, because I worry that people see resilience as your ability to just bounce back after challenge after challenge after challenge. Yeah. And actually, resilience is much more than that in my mind, in that it's about learning from the challenges that you're facing and then being able to move forward. So rather than seeing it like a bouncy ball that keeps coming back, it's more like, you know, the 1980s slinky spring.
Absolutely.
That kind of moves forward.
Yeah.
That you're learning something, and so, because otherwise you'll get stuck in a repetitive rut of just being able to be tough. And I don't think resilience is about being tough and hard.
It's absolutely not. I'm not tough and hard, and I'm resilient. And I train on resilience, but I like the slinky idea, I like the slinky concept. And I've used
that. You can have that one.
I've written about that. Let's take the slinky concept as an idea. So we are the slinkies. Now, our job is is quite rightly the outward forces that are stretching that spring. And if we keep stretching that spring, there is a point where that spring won't return to its original state. That's a kind of scientific phenomenon. But what we are not doing is proactively putting inward forces onto that spring so that we are not overstretching ourselves. We are in control, we are happy and contented, and if we do need to bounce back, we're not bouncing back from very far. So I see resilience as a scale of 1 to 10. You self-grade yourself, and wherever you are, that's absolutely fine. But you don't want to be less than 5 for very long. And if you are less than 5, you need to do something about it and put something in place. Because every day you'll come across something that's going to knock you back a -1, a -2. And if you're on a 5, -2 gets you to a 3, and then you're in big trouble. But what you can do, if you're a 5, think, okay, what's the quick win to get myself to a 6? What's the quick win to get myself one more from wherever I am? So when I'm on training, when I'm doing training, the one question I say to people is check in with yourself more often than you do. Okay. And ask yourself, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of your resilience, with 10 being I'm super duper resilient, life is amazing, everything is wonderful. Wherever you are, that's true, because you're self-assessing. And then ask yourself one simple question. What do I need to do to make myself one more? So if I'm a 6, how do I make myself a 7? So you're building capacity before you get hit by the inevitable minus numbers. You're looking for plus points in order to cope with the minus ones that are going to come along at some point during your day, your week, your year, your life.
And so I think we've covered a lot about this, but you cover it in depth in your book, Lift.
Yeah.
But if you could just summarise, David, therefore, why is there a need, in summary, to provide teachers with a lift in terms of their resilience?
I just think that we're not stopping for long enough to think about ourselves, and therefore the book is designed to provoke thinking in teachers, and deliberately written in very quick, bite-sized chunks so that people can get a quick boost, a quick lift, a quick reminder of the things they know they should be doing but aren't. And basically the book is just trying to provoke reflection and to remind colleagues that looking after themselves is okay, looking after themselves is good, and looking after themselves allows them to be the best teacher that they can be. And that actually sustainable practices are what we need. And actually, if we're not sustainable, then we're going to be no good to the profession, we're no good to ourselves, and we're not being the best teacher that we can be. And so over the course of an academic year, a little drip feed of good messages to remind colleagues of the things that they need to do, the basics, as you said, is important. That's the way I think that we should be doing it. And it's allowing people to say, I'm not okay. It's allowing people to prioritize themselves without feeling guilty, and it's engaging people, because it's deliberately coming at it from a quirky angle And then twisting that into, and this is what it's about. This is how it's connected to mental health. And I think finally, it's written by a male. And I think that certainly there is a gender issue in terms of having the ability to talk about feelings, moods, and emotions, and how that has an impact on us.
Yeah, and I know it's something that you feel that. You have a feeling that, or a question in your own mind about why are we not talking about how we're feeling? And do you have any thoughts on that? Why aren't we?
I think there's still a stigma attached to mental health. I think we're still thinking that it's a weakness if we have it, rather than the idea that we've all got a mental health issue. We're all on this sliding scale of 0 to 10, and that we all got to manage this thing in our heads, including me, and I teach on the stuff, and I think that it's seen as a weakness. And when we're trying to be the strong one for other people, we don't want to be that vulnerable person. And it's thanks to Brené Brown and others who are trying to promote this idea of vulnerability, and the idea that we are, as individuals, as human beings, we have flaws, we are imperfect, we are emotional creatures, and we need to accept that. And I think that also we're on this whirlwind or roller coaster of modern life where everything is connected and here and now, but actually all of those quick decisions, all of that immediacy is actually tapping into our chimp brain. It's tapping into our emotional brain. And actually we're not using our human brain, which is to be reflective, to think about it, and to come up with some better human solutions.
And I think just picking up on something you said there, David, you talked about having mental health or not, and actually should we be looking at it more as we look at physical health? So we don't ever talk about someone as having physical health or not having physical health, but there is this kind of, some people are physically more healthy than others on a scale, like you say. So why do is it a way that we just need to reshape our thinking about mental health and how we're feeling, and thinking about it isn't about having good mental health or not, but actually it's some people have better mental health than others on a sliding scale? Is that kind of what you're capturing?
I think so. I think there's a definite correlation between mental health and physical health. I think that as people are finding, you're going out for a walk on a daily basis is a good thing. Reconnecting with nature is tops us up, adds one. A walk is add one. Going for a run is add one on our mental health scale, on our resilience scale. And I think that, if you draw a Venn diagram, mental health and physical health, the overlap is pretty much resilience. I think the stigma is around the word mental health, and that's why I've deliberately chosen resilience, although some colleagues would potentially say that my work is around mental health, but I'm calling it resilience. So resilience has become okay to talk about. Mental health is still off the radar. Mental health is still one flew over the cuckoo's nest stuff, whereas resilience has become okay to talk about. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's taking us a step closer to where we need to be, in terms of accepting that we need to work on our mental health as much as we need to work on our physical health, as well as the fact.
And then to become absolutely better teachers because of it, and a better profession in terms of a healthier profession.
Absolutely. Well, but I think, people are amazed when I'm excited and I'm engaged with the groups I'm in front of when I teach about resilience. But that's not done by magic. I've come in the same car direction as them. I've come to the same point as them. I'm in the same time frame as them, in the scale of the day. But I see it as my role to manage my resilience to the point where I can deliver in an engaging, enjoyable fashion. That's part of teaching, and I think we've lost that in some areas. We've lost that fizz. Mm-hmm. We've lost that pizzazz, but I think we need to get that back.
We agree. So as we're coming to the end of our chat, David, if I could ask you to give us some pearls of wisdom, just quite concisely, what would you suggest would boost someone's resilience? If there are people listening to this thinking, I don't think that I'm in a really good place with regards to my resilience, what would your immediate kind of here's some tips to boost your resilience be?
Absolutely. Well, when I first came out of headship, I connected with a colleague in Australia at the University of Melbourne. And I said, OK, so what do I need to do to manage my resilience? And he said, it's very simple, David. The top three are manage your sleep. Number two, manage your sleep. Number three, manage your sleep. And for me, that stuck with me. And throughout my research, throughout everything I've written, everything I speak about, it's about managing your sleep. So I think we need to do more to protect that. And in terms of our caffeine intake, in terms of our social connection, in terms of our winding down in the evenings. The second handy tip is to scale it up. So to do that self-assessment on a regular basis, during the course of the day, where am I? How can I be one more? I've done that for a long, long time now, and it makes a huge difference to the way that I'm thinking and in the way that I'm dealing with things. And then I think my final tip is be proactive, stop being reactive, go out there, have a hobby, connect with people, phone each other, be in each other's spaces, go out for walks, be in nature. And just because we have virtual reality or a virtual world, let's not forget there's a real world out there, and it's in a pretty amazing place when you take the time to have a look at it.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much. As usual, David, it's been an absolute joy and fascinating to talk to you. And I hope everyone that's listening has taken something from this, and I'm assuming now we go off to have a nap, yeah?
I think everybody needs to stop this recording and chill down for an hour. And
chill down, go for a walk, go and have a nap. Have an early night.
A restorative 8-hour sleep tonight. That would be my handy hint, and I hope I've encouraged people to do just that.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much for your time today, David.
Not a problem. I've enjoyed it a huge amount.